Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Girls as young as 11 years old are being recruited into sex work by human traffickers. Northumberland is particularly vulnerable to being targeted due to its proximity to the Highway 401 corridor. In this interview, you are going to hear from Jocelyn Enright with the Kawartha Sexual Assault Center. Her organization just lost $175,000 from the federal government to support its efforts to prevent young women from being recruited, plus help those who want to leave sex work. This is one of the hidden tragedies taking place in our community. Have a listen and see what you think needs to be done. I'm so pleased to welcome back Jocelyn Enright, Prevention, Education, and Community Engagement Coordinator for the Kawartha Sexual Assault Center. Good to see you again, Jocelyn.
Hello, good to see you. Thank you for having us back.
The Kawartha Sexual Assault Center recently learned its federal funding from Public Safety Canada is not being renewed. What is the impact of that news?
Yeah, it's been really big news for us. We were fortunate enough to have that for quite a few years that was getting renewed, and it was specific for our human trafficking supports. So generally our funding that we get, like our core funding, comes from the provincial government, and that covers survivors age 16 and up. But we know with things like trafficking that the average age of entrance into trafficking or people that are being groomed is about 12 to 13. So this money allowed us to work with those younger age groups and getting them connected to support. So the loss of that means that we are back to just doing 16 and up, which obviously we still provide supports as much as we can then, but we are missing kind of those key age groups where people are most at risk for being trafficked.
So you received this money for 5 years of programming, am I correct?
Yes.
So then I appreciate the age group and the demographic, but what support specifically were you providing to survivors in that community?
Most of the supports we were doing at that point was focused a lot on safety. When you're dealing with that age group, you're dealing with a lot of people who are either entrenched in trafficking and can't leave for whatever reason, whether that's for safety reasons or they don't recognize they're being trafficking. So a lot of that is very much connected to meeting people where they're at, connecting them with other services that might be able to give them funding, like Victim Services Peterborough Northumberland. They sometimes have some more monetary support. So if we could get somebody out of a situation and maybe into a safe house or a hotel for a certain amount of time, or get them money for food and clothes and things. So it was a lot more of that kind of on the ground work and connecting with people who maybe aren't ready to leave yet or don't even recognize what's happening yet. So kind of doing that very initial stage treatment. So we're kind of missing again that entire part, which is again where people need the most support typically.
Before we go on, let's get some basics in place. What is human trafficking? Can you describe what that entails?
Yeah, human trafficking, it's a global issue. So it's related to, specifically we're talking about sex trafficking. So there are different forms of human trafficking, like labor trafficking, organ trafficking. But specifically when we're looking at sex trafficking, it is the recruitment of people to participate in sexual exploitation, basically. It happens a lot with young folks where, you know, they meet somebody, most often it's online, and, you know, they form a fake relationship with them, whether that's kind of more as a mentor or a friend or a more typically a romantic partner. You know, they offer them all of these wonderful things. They say they're going to be with them forever. And then once they're deeply, deeply connected to this person, they start to manipulate them. The relationship becomes toxic, and then they force them, whether that is physical force or simply mental manipulation, into doing sex work.
Is there any alternative sources of funding for this program?
We're doing our best to search for it through many different avenues. For right now, I don't know of anything that's come through, but we're doing our best to work with as many people as possible to try and find some way to supplement it.
Now, the Ontario government also has an anti-human trafficking strategy. It launched last year, and it's to last till 2030. Does the center do anything within this umbrella?
I would not be able to comment on that. I don't know enough information.
In the press release that you put out, your organization says that without this funding, there will be fewer tools. First of all, can we start with what tools are you using now and what are you going to lose?
So the tools now, again, are really getting to connect with folks when they are most at risk of trafficking. So hopefully, right, connecting with people maybe before they're fully entrenched in trafficking and if they're kind of just in those beginning stages. Or, again, really working with people where they're at. With trafficking, I think it's kind of a common misconception that, you know, it's really easy for people to get out of it once they realize what's happening. Because oftentimes people are not being, you know, it's not like the movies where people are locked in cages. It is very much a psychological manipulation. So oftentimes when we're working with trafficking survivors, it's working with them while they are still with their trafficker. And they may remain with their trafficker for years. So trying to work with them really on safety and stabilization. Most of the time, if someone is leaving a trafficking situation, in-depth trauma counseling is not the first thing that they need. What they need is their basic needs met by somebody who's not their trafficker. So getting them connected to shelter or some kind of safe housing, getting them connected to jobs, helping them get out of debt that a trafficker might have put them into. So we might be able to offer counseling for folks at some point, but that's typically not what survivors need right away. They're not looking at that till later. So unfortunately, we're kind of losing those connections right at the beginning.
You've used the word connecting in terms of initially meeting with these people. How does that process take place? How do you do that outreach work?
Again, we do a lot of work with community organizations. It can be very hard for people to, you know, get through the door for some sort of treatment. So even if it's something like often, you know, if someone's going to the hospital for a medical issue and they start to show some red flags for hospital workers about, you know, potential trafficking, then they can kind of do a call to us or victim services and see if maybe we can have a conversation with them. It's often not somebody, again, walking through the door and saying, you know, I'm experiencing trafficking. So it really is kind of about those soft handoffs and meeting people in those different office spaces and just seeing if we can show them that we're an agency to be trusted. That's a big thing. If somebody does not trust you as an agency, then they won't want to continue working with you. So just trying to meet people wherever they're at, if possible.
So this is a referral service. Am I understanding that right?
For the most part, yeah. Or we're working with folks if they are kind of, again, navigating, if they wanted to report something to police, we're supporting them with that. Yeah.
Now, you said earlier that you're now going to have fewer tools. What resources are left now with the funding gone?
With that funding gone, so for us, again, we still do support people with, you know, if they're navigating reporting to police, court support, if they're looking for counseling. What it really just means is that we are kind of back to being pretty strict with our funders about 16 plus. So if people connect with us earlier, we are kind of just referring to other agencies, but we can't really, you know, we can't be the ones to go and meet with folks. We can't be the ones to be doing that. So again, people are still welcome to come for counseling at some point. But again, with trafficking specifically, that's usually not something that's on people's radar for a long time.
You talked in your press release about rebuilding lives. But how is that different from, say, other services within the community that might help people find housing and jobs or means of stabilizing their lives?
I think because so much of human trafficking in and of itself, and sex trafficking specifically, involves sexual violence. So I think having that connection to a service that is so specific to sexual violence, even if we're not doing in-depth counseling, is still something that, again, can help people maybe recognize what's happened to them and know that they're being supported from all of these different angles. We really talk about with human trafficking survivors, wraparound supports are so important. Human traffickers, what they do is they basically provide people with everything that they could possibly need in an attempt to get them to not leave. So a lot of that is basic needs, but a lot of that is also self-esteem things and taking away that autonomy. So a lot of the work that we do with like consent, even like talking about that, is about that people have the autonomy to make their own decisions. So giving people back that information slowly through our meetings with them to let them know that they do have the power to choose what they want with their life.
In 2018, I did an interview with the local police talking about human trafficking. Northumberland was identified as a transit point or a target area, with hotels along the 401 often being used for human trafficking. Is that still true?
Yes. Basically, any town that is along a major highway or roadway like the 401 would be considered a hub. Even here in Peterborough, we're not on the 401, but we are right on Highway 7. So that is also a very major through road that crosses through a lot of different towns. A lot of times when you're on the 401 and you do have a little bit of more rural areas as well, those are being used. There's been a lot of research coming out with, any kind of motels, hotels, even Airbnbs at this point. So yeah, really any kind of major highway or traffic way is going to be a hub for people because it's much easier to transport.
Why is that?
Just ease of transport a lot of times, right? Now, not everybody is transported through different towns, but...
Why is that? Can you explain what you mean by transport? What are we talking about here? Can you be a little more specific, more graphic in telling us how this works?
Yeah, so for a lot of folks, that means that their traffickers are forcing them to go to different places. So wherever the clients are, they would have them go there. Again, for some people, they will be trafficked in one city and they will remain there the whole time. But for a lot of people, they are moving them around, especially if they get the sense that maybe that survivor is connecting to resources. They might really quickly want to move them to a different place so that they kind of have to start that process over again, or they lose their bearings. Some people who are trafficked really don't even know where they're at any given time because they're being moved constantly. It keeps it a lot harder for police and other folks to catch folks if they're constantly on the move, constantly using different aliases, constantly having different addresses.
What's the difference between prostitution and sex trafficking?
Yeah, so prostitution or sex work, there's kind of two different forms. There's consensual sex work, where somebody who is over the age of 18 is consenting to being a sex worker, is deciding, yes, this is something I'm going to do. They decide what they do. They decide what their hours are. They decide how much money. They keep all their money. With sex trafficking, it is somebody being forced into that or being made to think that, that they think that, oh yeah, I'm consenting to this. But then when you look at the relationship and you realize that, no, they actually didn't consent to it. Oftentimes they don't keep any of their money. They don't get to choose their hours. They don't get to choose what they do. They're often made to do things that they don't want to do. And anybody who is under age 18 cannot consent to being a sex worker. So if it's under 18, it does not matter. It is against the law for them to be doing that.
You've mentioned age a couple of times in our conversation, and I want to come back to it because I understand children as young as 11 years old are getting recruited into this lifestyle. What has been the center's experience in recent years?
It's very early that people are getting connected, and it often is at that age through online connections a lot of the time. So, you know, people are on apps. Basically, at this point, any kind of app that has the ability for someone to private message somebody potentially has a risk of trafficking. So what folks will do is connect with young folks online and, again, make it seem like they're starting just a very casual relationship, asking them questions about their life. Where do you live? Tell me about your friends. What they're doing at that point is looking for little bits of information about what that child thinks is missing from their life. Right? If they're very lonely, let's say they don't have a lot of social supports. Let's say they don't get along with their parents. Maybe, you know, all of these different things. They don't have the nicest things. That trafficker, what they're doing is getting that information. It feels very nice for a young person, right? To have somebody care about their interests. And then they kind of slowly build that trusting relationship. They slowly start to give them what they're missing, so that that person really genuinely believes that, oh, this person is my boyfriend, or, oh, this person is my really good friend.
You've also mentioned in our conversation the victim services of Peterborough and Northumberland, which gives you a connection to our area. But is there still a task force in Northumberland that is addressing this issue?
I believe so. I know that we're on the Human Trafficking Coalition with Victim Serve, and that involves different agencies from all of the different counties. So I believe there is still that. Again, there's lots of different agencies. It's not just us who are working with trafficking survivors. So that does not mean that there aren't other agencies as well working, but it has taken away that element of sexual violence specifically, which is inherently a part of trafficking.
What's next then for you guys when it comes to, I mean, there's not going to be the funding. I know you're looking for funding, but how else can you go out and find a way to sustain this program?
I mean, funding's the biggest part. Like, that is, we're trying our best. Again, we still have close relationships with these agencies, so we are going to do our best to still stay as connected as possible. If there's any way that we can still connect with folks and at least let them know about what our services are, so that when they do get to that point where they're within our age range and supports, that hopefully they know us, they're comfortable with us, and they can come. That's the best that we can do right now. And education as well, I think. I do all of our education, so I am still happy to talk to everybody about what trafficking is, because the more that people know about what it is versus what it isn't can also really help us kind of stop it before it happens. So I will still be talking to everybody and educating. So if anybody is ever looking for information, whether you're a worker, a parent, a school, we're more than happy to come and chat with you about how you can be a part of stopping this as well.
How much money did you lose?
Quite a lot. I believe it was around $175,000.
Jocelyn Enright, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
That was Jocelyn Enright, Prevention Education and Community Engagement Coordinator for the Kawartha Sexual Assault Center. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.